Hi, everyone, and welcome to our latest Metricite episode. This is Beth Schultz, VP of Research and Principal Analyst at Metrigy, and today I'll be speaking with workplace wellness expert Laura Putnam. Laura is the author of the book Workplace Wellness That Works, as well as CEO and founder of wellness firm Motion Infusion. As I explored in my recently published Employee Engagement Market Overview, wellness has become a central component of the strategies many companies have put in place over the last 2 years to optimize employee experience. I'm glad to have Laura here with me today to give us some great historical perspective and a look at the status quo. Laura, welcome.
Thank you so much, Beth. It's great to be with you.
So Laura, let's start with a little bit of a background, please. Tell us about your firm, Motion Infusion. What is it does? What do you do at Motion Infusion, and why did you launch the firm?
You know, Motion Infusion, our mission is very simple. It's to get individuals, teams, and organizations in motion, literally, as in please don't have a seat, but also figuratively, as in making a change in all domains of well-being. So whether it's physical, social, emotional, financial, community, career, we know that really what the goal is here, whether we're talking about employee experience or specifically about well-being, it's the work is really about enabling every employee to become their best self and leveraging the workplace in a way to really help every individual become that better self.
And just quickly, when did you found Motion Infusion?
In 2008.
So employee experience has been on our minds for quite a long time, but certainly it's kind of come to front and center these last couple of years since everybody went to, you know, working from home and the pandemic closed all of our office, et cetera.
Absolutely. And you know, if I can speak to that briefly, in terms of what I've seen over the time that I first started Motion Infusion in 2008, at that time, the focus was really around cost reduction, particularly around reducing healthcare costs. And frankly, the approach in workplace wellness was very much of a transactional one. We, as a company, are investing in these wellness programs to reduce our healthcare spend. And now what fortunately a growing number of organizations have really recognized is that it's much less about a transactional ROI, and it's more about how do we create a transformational experience for our employees such that they are healthier, happier because of where they work, as opposed to being less so. And again, it's less about that transactional exchange and more about really creating a wonderful experience for them.
So that's interesting. So companies have gone from a focus on cost reduction, right, as you said, but then how are they measuring the success of their, you know, these programs that they put in place over the last couple of years for employee experience improvements?
Well, certainly in the last few months, companies have come to realize that they have to invest in well-being, with the great resignation, which my friend Ryan Picarella refers to as the great renegotiation. Employees are voting with their feet, and they want to know that the employer that they work for actually cares about them. And so that is well-being in a more expansive, transformational sense as opposed to a transactional one. And those companies that are not stepping up to meet the moment are really suffering through loss of talented employees.
Yeah, so I would imagine retention, attrition, those are high on the measures that companies are watching these days.
Absolutely. And, you know, very simply, you give me any metric that matters to the organization, whether you're talking about productivity, profitability, absenteeism, presenteeism, safety on the job, retention, attraction, and I will show you how that ties to employee well-being. So, for example, those employees who are thriving at work, whether it's in person or in a virtual setting, they are 81% less likely to leave. So very simply, well-being done well, as in well-being that feels good to employees and to the employer, is not only good for people, but it's good for the bottom line, and it is essential for building a high-performing team.
That's really fascinating. And you know, it's good for companies to be able to put those numbers on the programs that they're sort of initiating. I mean, 81%, I mean, that's pretty darn significant.
Absolutely. And also things like understanding the role of mental health. I mean, we know that studies show that the number one reason why people are absent from work related to a chronic condition is because of depression, sadness, and other mental issues. And so somebody who is suffering from depression, for example, is likely to miss twice as many days as somebody who is battling cancer. So this is why employers really need to begin looking at well-being from multiple dimensions. And I would say particularly now in the wake of COVID-19, we might call mental health the second act of the pandemic. And so employers really need to be prioritizing the mental health and emotional well-being of their employees right now.
You know, I'm kind of curious, when you think about mental health, where does that problem of video fatigue play in? And that's something that we've heard so much about, particularly in the early days of the pandemic when everybody went, you know, when started working at home and virtual meetings became so prevalent. But video fatigue, burnout, where does that fit in with your kind of how you look at mental health?
Yeah, you know, I think of mental health as kind of, you know, there's a story of two people who are walking on a beach, and one of them keeps, and the beach is covered with starfish who've been washed up onto the shore, and one of the two people keeps picking up one starfish at a time and tossing it back into the water, and the other one says, you know, why are you bothering to do that? And they respond by saying, well, for that one starfish, and he picks up a starfish and throws it back in, I just made all the difference in the world. And so this has kind of been the prevailing approach to tackling mental health in the workplace, which is let's identify the individuals who are at risk, those starfish that have been washed up onto the shore, and let's connect them with the resources that they need. And while that sounds good, unfortunately, the research shows that it actually just doesn't work that well. So, for example, over 97% of large employers have a so-called EAP program in place, or employee assistance program in place, designed to really help those individuals at risk. But less than 7% of eligible employees actually engage with those EAP programs. And so what I've been advocating for more, if companies really want to start to tackle mental health issues, is to think of taking more of a let's flood the beach approach. And how can we start to look at the workplace itself and how it may or may not be driving some of these mental health issues, particularly issues like burnout and fatigue. So what studies show, particularly coming from organizations like Gallup, is that this rising issue of burnout has less to do with the individual employee and more to do with the workplace itself. So structural issues like work overload or unreasonable time pressure or lack of transparency or toxicity tolerated. Those are the kinds of issues that companies really need to be addressing head on. And I think that that also really ties to how they're conducting their meetings. And are they looking for meaningful ways to address these issues such as fatigue? And so there are some creative things that particularly managers can be thinking about in order to combat these rising rates of fatigue, particularly accelerated by all of these virtual meetings. And that includes things like walking meetings, or that includes things like really checking in with employees to see how they're doing and appreciating them, not just for what they do at work, but for who they are as human beings.
Walking meetings, I like that idea. And that could be accomplished in person or virtually, right? Because you could all be wearing earbuds and walking, you know, through your neighborhoods as you're doing a meeting, right?
Absolutely. And you know, it's really about getting a little bit more creative around what happens in the context of the meeting. So for example, the team leader might say, hey, let's spend the first half of this meeting all getting off of our laptops, let's transfer this over to our phones. Let's all get outside and let's focus just on more of our relationship building for that portion of our meeting. And then we can come back and get back onto our laptops and kind of get down into business more. But during that relationship building portion, we might do an exercise like name three good things. Each person named three good things that have happened to them that day. There's really interesting research showing that if you do this for 6 weeks straight, just simply name three good things that happened to you that day, that it will literally rewire your brain to become more optimistic. So this is a great example of what I advocate for more, which is this idea of team care as opposed to just relying on individuals to engage in self-care.
I would imagine technology will play some role in that, but it certainly will never be enough. And when I mention technology, I mean things like, you know, you see Zoom, for example, you know, introducing ways of equalizing the meeting experience and kind of pulling, making it less onerous and, you know, less, making people less prone to burnout if they have to sit in consecutive virtual meetings. Would you agree?
Yeah, I think that one of the greatest joys of technology is that it allows for more flexibility. And what the research shows is that one of the biggest drivers of stress is a lack of flexibility, a lack of control over one's day. And certainly technology allows for more flexibility around where we do our work, but even more flexibility around how we do our work and when we do our work. And so for that reason, I think that there's a lot that we can really be looking to in the way of technology to help us to address some of these key issues around well-being.
You know, you sort of dovetailed right into a question that I wanted to ask. And you know, that's around, and again, I'll stick with those video meeting providers because that's where employees spend so much of their time today, at least if they're working from home. But we've seen a lot of those providers start, I shouldn't say a lot, we've seen a few providers start to provide insights to employees as well as managers, but, you know, with the data viewed in aggregate for managers. But, you know, to show them usage data about how they're meeting, when they're meeting, what they're doing during those meetings. Are they using their video? Are they always on mute? You know, are they actively engaged or not? And while at an individual level, the goal is to, you know, increase awareness of behaviors, just as you sort of spoke to, I think, that might contribute to fatigue or a loss of productivity and then provide guidance for change. So how important do you think it is to have this sort of insight available to employees for improved well-being? I mean, do they need a dashboard that sort of helps them visualize how it is that they're interacting with these tools?
You know, I actually think that the best way to engage employees, especially in their well-being, is an often overlooked avenue, and that is actually engaging their managers. The manager alone is uniquely positioned within the workplace to either persuade or dissuade their team members from engaging with their well-being. So whether it's how one conducts oneself during a virtual meeting, people are really looking to their manager to give them the cue as to or signal them how they should be engaging with it. So, for example, if the manager has themselves on mute, if they are not sharing their video, it's likely that team members are going to do the same. And in fact, there's some really fascinating research showing that if a manager multitasks during meetings, whether it's in person or virtual, likely that their team members are going to do the same. Or if a manager sends late night emails, there's research showing that for every hour that they do, that roughly translates into an added 20 minutes of after hours email time for their team members. So the more that organizations can really think about infusing well-being through their managers and infusing best practices around how to engage in these virtual meetings, the more likely their team members are to be both well as to be more engaged in these gatherings.
Okay, fair enough. Laura, what about tools? We've seen some tools come about for, you know, inserting wellness breaks into a work day. Just saw this not too long ago, an announcement like this come out of one of the big contact center providers. So if an agent is just gotten off a really stressful call or, you know, 5 calls in a row or something, they might, you know, put up a wellness screen on that agent's desktop. How effective do you think that kind of tool is? And if you do think it's effective, do you have any tips on how to get employees to actually take advantage of sort of these mindfulness type of exercises?
You know, again, I think the more that people can do this together, particularly led by their manager, the better. So I think that those kind of reminders actually are really helpful. Like, for example, you know, reminders to stand up. There's research showing that if we just simply stand up for a couple of minutes every hour, that can help to offset the effects of sitting for too long, including things like fatigue. But again, the more people can do it as a team, the more likely they are to do it. So for example, and the more likely they are to engage with those resources that employers are providing. So the messages that we offer to managers are very simple, which is to do, speak, and create. So lead by example. It's not about being perfect. It's about making the effort. And in fact, when managers do it imperfectly, people are likely to feel more permission to do it imperfectly themselves as well. To speak, for managers to actually talk about well-being, so to talk about these resources, and then to think about creating, as in creating team-based systems and rituals that help to normalize well-being. So, for example, if you talk about, there's some interesting research showing that, for example, in call centers, that team members experience greater benefits during break time when they do it as a team as opposed to doing it one by one. So how might managers create some systems that help to build more bonds within their team, especially now? So, you know, another study coming from Gallup shows that those individuals who have not just a good friend but a best friend at work are 7 times more likely to be highly engaged in their work.
Huh, that's interesting. I like the idea of a team break. That certainly would help with kind of building the culture, which I think has taken a hit during COVID as well.
Yeah, and if I can just add one thing to that, I mean, it's really interesting. A large 19-country study conducted by ADP Research Institute found that the culture that employees experience when they are at work is largely the culture that they experience within the context of their team. And I would say that that sense of the culture that one experiences has become even more team-centric during this time of working from home or working in a hybrid environment.
So Laura, I want to wrap up with one or two last questions. The first, I'm wondering if you have any good case study examples to share of how a company or an organization may have approached employee experience during this sort of period of virtual work.
So the story is that we were actually asked by a large health insurance provider to come in and conduct our program called Managers on the Move. Now, this is, at the time, was an in-person workshop that empowers managers to become what we call multipliers of well-being for their team. So kind of driving a middle-out movement of well-being across the organization, beginning with those simple behaviors of do, speak, and create. Now, 2 weeks before I was getting ready to fly out to the Midwest to conduct this workshop, conducted multiple times to reach all of their managers, COVID hit. And so we ended up having to convert this entire program into a virtual engagement and actually expanded it into a three-part series that was conducted over a 15-month period. And even though every single aspect of this program and its implementation, that is, its implementation driven through the managers who participated in the training program, all of that was virtually conducted, and yet we saw unbelievable results. That is that both managers and their team members reported higher levels of well-being across all domains of well-being, and everyone reported higher levels of feeling like that the organization that they worked for actually cared about their well-being.
That's fantastic. And I would have to say probably an anomaly for the time, right?
Absolutely. I mean, this is a time that we know, for example, that life expectancy went down, not just because of COVID itself, but also because of its collateral damage. So certainly people were reporting diminished levels of well-being across the board. So this was very much of an anomaly. I mean, a success in and of itself, but the fact that these rates of improvement occurred during this challenging time, testament to the power of what can happen when managers really take it upon themselves to become these multipliers of well-being.
Okay. And let's wrap up with one last question, Laura. And, you know, you've touched on so much during these last 20 minutes or so. What do you consider to be the must-haves for optimizing employee experience? Why don't you kind of put it all together in a nutshell for us?
So this is exactly what I tackled in my book, Workplace Wellness That Works. And I was really intrigued with all of the articles, the mainstream articles that were coming out about how workplace wellness doesn't work. And if you think about it, the idea of leveraging every workplace to promote better health and well-being is a really, really good idea, given the chronic conditions that we're facing even pre-pandemic. So some keys, so that's, I think, that a first thing to really keep in mind is just because it's not working in so many cases in terms of rates of engagement, in terms of benefits to the bottom line, doesn't mean that it can't work. And so here are some very simple ways that you can start to get your efforts to promote better health and well-being across the organization to actually work. So the first is to shift your mindset from thinking about starting yet another program, which in and of itself feels transactional, to instead starting a movement. So what is it that inspires people to engage with a movement as opposed to a program? So one of the things that really inspires people to join a movement is things like starting with what's possible, helping employees to imagine what's possible. So really getting them to think about, what does me at my best look like? And then helping them to start with what's right as opposed to what's wrong. You know, so many of these wellness programs, it's about measuring everything that's wrong with employees, like you're overweight, your blood pressure is high, you're stressed out, and now we're going to fix you. And it's no wonder that employees are actually feeling scared off by these well-intended wellness efforts as opposed to feeling engaged by them. But it's also things like really thinking about how organizations can really start to change the culture and the environment around the employee, as opposed to putting so much of the onus on the individual employee, so that the individual employee often is feeling like it's their fault that they're feeling stressed out, for example. And so what can an organization do to really start to make health and well-being just a way of doing business, so that employees literally feel like that they are healthier and happier because of where they work as opposed to less so?
Well, those are some great thoughts to leave our listeners with, Laura. So I really do appreciate you taking the time to share, and I wish everybody a great day at work and, you know, prolonged well-being too. Not always easy to accomplish, but I think with your advice, we can get there, right?
Absolutely. And again, you know, also engaging those managers as part of creating a different way of experiencing work. Those managers, again, as I keep hitting on that, they are so important in this whole equation around how do we actually engage employees in their health and well-being. And while wellness may not be part of the job description, every manager needs to know that they really do matter when it comes to the health and well-being of their team members, and that it doesn't have to be hard. It's very simple things like appreciating people, not just for what they do, but for who they are as human beings.
That is an excellent thought to leave us on. Laura, thank you so much. And listeners, thanks again for joining me on this MetroSite episode. I'll be back soon with more insight from our research and employee experience, as well as customer experience, workplace collaboration, and workflow management. Until next time, take care.